5 minutes now where we can have a conversation and a dialogue with the panel. Henrik and Jane, who have presented this morning, have been joined by two other colleagues. We've got Anne Keneally sat with us. She's a HR lecturer in the Service Sector Management Department here at Sheffield Hallam. Okay. And John Broadhurst, who is currently, if I get your title right, Head of Catering at Sheffield Hallam University. Yeah. John, I know Jane and Henrik have introduced themselves a little to the group. Can I ask you just to give a short overview of your history and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I've been here a short while, 6 months. I've had a 25-year career in the hotel industry. I started out after graduating by working for Southern Sun Hotels in South Africa. Returned to the UK, I've been GM with Swallow, with Marriott, with IHG, with Residor, and with Jury's Inn. So I've seen quite a lot of different cultures over the past sort of 15 years or so. I've seen a lot of change in the hotel industry during that period too, of course.
Okay, thank you. Anne, do you want to?
I will indeed. Thanks so much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Anne Keneally, and I'm currently here as a senior lecturer. My background, I suppose, has been hospitality focus, my undergraduate degree. I studied in Dublin, and from there I went on to Germany to do an internship for about 8 to 9 months. When I was about 19, so that in itself was quite challenging. Very diverse environment, language-wise, etc. And then after that, I finished my degree and I went to the States for about 18 months. So there I managed a 750-bedroomed hotel as supervisor at the front desk. And again, a very culturally diverse environment also. And I suppose for me, the progression from front desk agent and to the supervisory level was also quite challenging. And obviously, I learned lots of skills in relation to human resource management at that particular stage. I then went back to the National University of Galway, and I started studying their human resource management and an international degree in industrial relations. And from there, 2008, I applied for the job here at Sheffield Hallam and human resource manager.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's wonderful. Right, guys, so the plan of the next 20 minutes really is I'll warm the panel up with a quick and easy question to get them going, but then we're going to open questions up to the floor. Okay, so anything you might want to pick up on some of the things that we talked about this morning, you might have other areas and questions you might want to ask our panel. Okay, so I'm going to start, guys, the panel with what attracted you to working in hospitality and HR specifically? Was it something you set out to do, or was it something you came into? What was the attraction of hospitality and HR people management in particular? Jane, should we start with you?
Well, I went to I got a scholarship to a very good girls' school, and when I was about 15, I walked past the Midland Hotel in Manchester, and I saw all these rather well-dressed people coming out, and I thought, cool, that's a good place to be. So I went back to school and said, I'm going to leave school and go and do hospitality. And they went completely mad, and my parents went mad, and everybody went mad. And I was the only girl who left after GCSE level. And I just thought it was just a fun, exciting, glamorous place to be, and you can do all the things you want to do in it, really. So very simple answer.
Okay.
HR was by default, but I'm an operator by background. But I actually think that being an operator by background and then doing HR is really useful because you've seen it from that point of view. You've got to understand the other stakeholders.
I guess I was attracted by probably like a lot of my generation, food and beverage, really, which I guess a lot of the institutions were focused on the training in that day. And I suppose when I was in my teens, I wanted to be a chef, and my parents influenced me to go to a university. So I went to the Scottish Hotel School at Strathclyde, and I went from there, really. But the attraction for me was certainly around food and around service.
So I wanted to travel. So I came from Sweden. That's very far away. And I wanted to travel. I wanted to see the content. I want to get out. And I think that is a good opportunity. It's a brilliant business to be in if you really want to travel. You've been to South Africa, working in there, et cetera. Why the people side? Because I simply felt that this is where the delivery of the brand is happening. I didn't think brand at that time, but I think this is where it happens. And if it's magic, it's magic. And if it's not going to work, it's brutally wrong. And then people will not come back. And I saw the power of that.
Okay, thank you. Anne?
I suppose family business for me, Emma. a lot of my relations would have been involved in small family-run businesses, restaurants, pubs and bars. And from that, my kind of passion grew for hospitality. And also, as Henrik said, I think just the experience and actually the travelling has always been there as well. And I can see we can do that quite a lot with the hospitality industry.
Fantastic. Thank you. Guys, any questions? Whoa, hands are flying up everywhere. They're jumping for you guys. Stephen, we'll start with something.
Stephen Ball, for those who don't know me. I normally keep quiet because I want all these other people to ask questions. But I burning question of Henrik.
Yeah.
The slide which you showed, the pie charts.
Yes.
Where the students have gone on 2 years after graduation.
Yes.
I think it's a question perhaps we can all have an answer to and discuss. You said it's a worrying slide. Why is it a worrying slide, and for whom, is the question that I've got. Because you've got 30% or something went into hospitality, and so many into financial services and all that.
I think on one hand, it's really positive that our graduates, 2 years after actually being in the industry, are being picked up by other industries. And I think retail banking, I think the retail example with Audi, etc., it's very fresh because we come with a customer-centric focus and very service-centric focus. I think that is the great part with it. The part where I'm worried is that in the long term, will students or young people continue to go into a hospitality school environment and actually then choose the hospitality track? That is my worry. And why are people leaving? We know about pay. At one point of time, I was supporting the Grosvenor House in London, and the general manager, who was not from the UK, he said, "Henrik, I think I have a challenge at the Grosvenor House. I have 120% turnover in front office in a year." And I said, "So what do you pay?" "Well, I pay £1,500 a month." And I said, "Do you know how much it costs to rent an apartment in London? Do you know what taxes are? Do you have any idea?" And you ask people to speak the languages, to work shift, to have straight teeth, and to be able to count and be representative at 5 o'clock in the morning. That was a little bit of the challenge, and we need to work on that kind of what is the image of the industry, perhaps. That's my worry. Yeah.
It was interesting what you displayed there on the slide, particularly in relation to what the employers are actually looking for. Mm-hmm. And for me, as a course leader, I would look at that list and actually see: are we actually setting up our students in universities around the country to actually almost kind of mirror those particular characteristics or that particular profile that you're actually looking for?
Mm-hmm. I actually think, as an employer not in hospitality, although we deal with hospitality industry, I would look for a hospitality graduate because it's so much easier for us, because I think they do have those skills. Yeah. Much more than if you've majored in English or something else, you might not have picked up those skills, whereas I think a hospitality degree is very rounded and you are commercial, and if you do your homework and do it right, you've got those skills and you can problem solve and you can communicate and you work in teams. So it's much, much easier for me as an employer to take a hospitality graduate than any other sort of graduate. I know, because I do it all the time. And it's much less hard work. Yeah. So I think everybody should do a hospitality degree and then decide where they want to go.
And then move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen. Yeah. Richard.
I think you need to, if I'm advising a job set, I do a lot of mentoring, for graduates and things, and you can tell from an organisation's website what their culture is likely to be. If you do your homework and look at it and look at the people bits and, do they have values? How do they recruit? What sort of things are they saying? You can get a sense of what that culture is. And then it's about saying, would I fit in that culture? Do I want to be in a place where it's very structured, for instance, where there's lots of policy, or do I want to be somewhere it's a bit more flexible, a bit more fun? That's a very simplistic answer. But I think it's about making it very practical. Don't overanalyze it. Just go, what's important to me? If you sit down and write all of the things that are important to you, and then would I get them in that place, then that's a good start, really.
Yeah, I think what is important is, yes, you fit into a culture, and your gut feel is going to tell you a lot. People's gut feel, by just getting a feel for how do people communicate around the website, etc. But also, it's not molding people into the same personality. That is absolutely not, but because you need to recruit at the same time very different people. So you need to have weird people, and you need to have very handsome people, and you need to have very international people, you need to have very local people. You need to have that kind of, I mean, simplified. And you need to have that. The process-driven people and the strategist working together is beautiful. But two strategists working together, two process people, it's not gonna rock the boat in the same way and getting things done. Yeah. But the culture, this is what we agree about.
Can I just pick up on that? John, in terms of the university catering and recruiting and selecting staff into university catering, perhaps quite different from the Jane's luxury impression of the hospitality industry at the age of 16, are culture and fit important for you, or are skills and the operation more of a driver?
I've been in the role for 6 months and haven't had a vacancy yet. There's no turnover. So there is a bit of an issue in that as well, that, you know, the culture gets refreshed by employing people, of course, and bringing new skills into a business. I mean, if you compare that to the hotel industry, where you can experience turnover from between 30 and 60%, it's quite different. And I think in some ways that perhaps prevents dynamism as well. So, yeah.
Start, Henrik,
that's your question.
All right. I think that the word embracing diversity, it starts there. Embracing diversity means that you're either actively embracing it, or you just say, oh, we embrace it. But if you actively embrace it, then you also understand that, for instance, let's talk about the UK market. We have some destinations in the UK that if you don't have a Chinese or Russian speaker at the front desk, it's not going to work. You're actually not going to tap into the understanding of the client who is actually coming there. So I think that more and more what we see is that people are recruiting more from the nationalities where their customers come from, but also, let's say, diversity is much more than that. It's not only gender and nationality where you come from, but you need to tap into where is the potential of your customers coming from? Are we actually replicating that? And that's lifestyle, and that's a lot of other diversity issues. So I would start there.
And I think from absolutely agree, a practical point of view, it's about if you think you've got lots of people with different views, different backgrounds, different influences, it's about communicating very clearly when people join, this is what we need you to know, and teaching people that, because people don't know. So in a hotel, for instance, you know, I know Ligon Arms in Broadway, you will have many cultures and nationalities working there, but one of their values is Britishness. They don't want to have British people working there necessarily, but they want people to embrace a British culture. So understand that we have PIMS on a hot day, and understand about the locale, and that's about training them in and explaining to people and giving them places to go for the information. Yeah, so that it's about communication for me.
There's still a very big disconnect between values and company values and so forth, and a very high turnover of customer-facing staff who are often part-time and very difficult to engage and very difficult to recruit as well. A lot of times it's, can you fog a mirror? Right, you're in. And how do you see breaking down that? Bringing those people in, even if they don't particularly want to stay long, so they're not looking for a career.
I think, first of all, you treat them the same as everybody else, because most people treat part-time people, particularly in the pub industry, with, you know, they don't really get anything that everybody else gets, and they're missing a huge opportunity, because if you bring people in and do things around engaging them, which, you know, might be, you know, spending time or communicating or, you know, whatever it is, I think you've got to treat them the same way, even though you're not going to have them very long. You might not send them on the, you know, the Harvard business course, but there are certain things you can do to engage people in. And I call them little ka-ching moments, that the small bits that build up. You know, you can't just make people be engaged. You can't say, right, there you are, you're engaged now. It's about doing things. And if you get the culture of your company right, and I know because I work with a lot of organisations who haven't really thought about this stuff, haven't really defined their values, haven't defined their behaviours, haven't sorted out their leadership stuff. You know, for a start, if you're kind to people, it's a start. Seriously, you know, why would leaders in organisations not be nice to people? But they're not always nice to people. So you're never going to engage them if you're not even nice to them. I'll shut up. I'll get on my soapbox. Henrik, say something.
No, but I totally agree. I totally agree. That's a basic, isn't it? Yeah.
I think engagement is the key. And though the contract is completely different, if you don't treat someone properly, they're not going to want to work for you. So I think that's critical. And, of course, we do have an issue with sometimes pay levels. You've talked about that. Mm-hmm. And we also have an issue where people see it as a transitory job, not career. So there's always going to be that. So it's inevitably going to be a high turnover. But if you don't treat someone properly, they don't want to work for you. And they're not going to be able to espouse your values either. You've got no chance. So.
So an example is we had a small little airport hotel in Munich. It was very difficult to get to for staff who didn't live on the airport, and very few people do live in an airport. So therefore, there was a turnover at the morning, what is it called, the breakfast staff. And the general manager, he was actually looking at this holistically and saying, okay, there's a turnover at the breakfast staff. What are the issues? Very difficult to get there by bus, public transport, etc., early mornings, repetitive work, etc., etc. So what he did was to say, I trust a group of, if you say, age-wise, senior women, to actually figure it out. You are 7 women, you are employed, and average age was probably, you know, 57 and north of 57, and saying, you know, you run the breakfast. I don't want to deal with it. You supervise yourself. If one is sick, you call the other, etc. So a self-managing team. But actually, who do you want to see at the breakfast in the morning, someone who is engaged? Did they love their jobs? Absolutely. Were they empowered to run it? Absolutely. Were they having a relationship with the customers? Absolutely. Did they display the values of the organization? Absolutely. Another thing is about diversity. A study was recently done that when you hire people to roles who are, for instance, disabled, and you hire them into roles, the what is it called? The turnover of the disabled group of individuals doing the same task as somebody else was 48% lower. Now, that is coming back to the kind. Treat people kindly, equally, but actually look at the world diverse way. And not everyone needs to be hired on a full-time basis. Maybe I want to work nights only, 3 times a week. Maybe I am, a father with 2 kids, and I'm also taking care of my old sick mother. So I can only work 3 days a week, but I want to get out because I want to be a part of a community, for instance. Let's cater for that. So we need to leave that kind of full time only, and maybe we have a collection of roles.
Okay, we've probably got time for one more question.
I think there's been a lot of panic cutting, which is not going to serve them well as we come out because, you know, obviously people have shareholders and, you know, you need to get shareholder value. But I think people have gone a bit wild with it. And when I was saying people are on the knees, that's why. And I think it's really going to be difficult for them to recover. I do. But I think some people have been really sensible and have got everybody together and said, look, I mean, this is what I did in my company. Look, this is where we are. A bit, as you said, with your 7 old ladies, yeah. You know, how are we going to solve it? What do you think? Because if you ask people, you don't employ children who are stupid. You employ adults who've got brains. Mm-hmm. You say, look, we're in this. We've got to make this for our shareholders, blah, blah, blah. But there are some concessions. What would you do? You will get loads and loads of stuff back, brilliant ideas that a board would never think of because they're not on the front line. So I always say involve people in it. You know, you've got to be a leader and make decisions, but involve them in the feedback. But I think we're going to be in trouble in some quarters where they've just cut and cut and cut till there's very little left.
I think over the last few years we've seen the kind of brands get bigger, and I think investors in hotel properties have seen, well, actually my bricks and mortar are safer with a known international brand, and I think the middle players are disappearing quite quickly. So the brands are getting more powerful, and the days when the guy had owned the hotel, ran it and owned the badge on the door, you know, it's starting to move away from that, and all three these days are very different. So in some ways, I think that the kind of business pressures are raising as more stakeholders are involved in one business now. So I think brand expansion has been a result in terms of, you know, safety in numbers, better impact, and so on.
Yeah, just in relation to brand, I think for yourselves as students of the future, I think you need to capitalise on branding yourselves. And definitely using that slide that you talked about there as well, Henrik, that can definitely be applied to an individual.
Yeah.
Your core values, your objectives, and where you're actually going. Because at the end of the day,
yeah,
the hospitality industry will be there, but it's about you actually being able to fit into that and branding yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. I say thank you very much.
Thank